Three Lives by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 9. Born aloft in the arms of angels, oh boy, oh boy, said Hoagy to himself. Then suddenly there was a tremendous pull on Hoagy, and he found himself torn away from the arms of the angels. Down, down, down he fell, turning head over feet through the living darkness. As suddenly as it occurred, it ceased, and Hoagy seemed to be bouncing on the end of a piece of rubber, or acting like a yo-yo. He was confused and quite disoriented. He seemed to be somewhere, but where, he could not tell. He twisted about, and then, as though he were peering through a hole in the ceiling or a hole in the floor, he saw a weird scene. Hoagy was looking down into a funeral home. He shuddered with fright as he looked and saw all those naked bodies there, on peculiar tables, and all having the most diabolical things done to them. Some were having blood drained out. Others were having body orifices stopped up to prevent leakage. And off in a little cubicle, Hoagy saw himself, the body which he had left. He was on one of these strange tables, and bending over him was a young woman with a cigarette drooping loosely from her lower lip. Hoagy really started with astonishment when he observed that the woman was shaving the face of his dead body. As he watched, a man hurried across the floor beneath and said, "Do a good job, Beth. Mr. McCaug's washer was a very important man. We've got to have him on display by this afternoon. Get on with it, will you?" The woman just nodded her head and went on with her work. She shaved him very, very closely indeed, and then she applied makeup. She brushed his hair, or what hair he had left on his head, and applied dye to various gray patches, and then she looked critically at his body and walked to the door of the cubicle and yelled, "Hey, boss, this stiff's ready. Come and okay it, will ya?" The boss hurried out of the little cubicle at the far end and rushed toward her, screaming excitedly, "You mustn't say things like that, Beth. You mustn't say things like that. This is the body of Mr. Hoagy McOgswasher, a very important local man. I demand that all these bodies be treated with respect." "Well, boss, you don't show respect to some of them," Beth replied. "I mind some of the stiffs you've tumbled in the sawdust and screwed down quick. They didn't get much, did they? But okay, have it your way. You're the boss." "Okay, goodbye, Mr. McCogswasher," she said, as she sauntered jauntily off to another job. Hoagy turned away in amazement when, after some undetermined time, he was compelled to look down again. He found that his body had vanished, and another body was being brought in. It was all wrapped up in a whole mass of cellophane, folded up like a parcel of laundry, he thought. He watched with interest as the cellophane sheeting was unwrapped, and the body was exposed. It was a woman, and the boss man and male assistant soon got her clothes off. Hoagy, a most modest man, averted his eyes, and in doing so he looked rather further than he had seen before, and he saw one of the display rooms. There he was, propped up in a very expensive casket, and there were people gazing down on him. They were drinking coffee, he saw. One put his coffee cup down on the casket. Hoagie looked down at himself and thought he looked just like a film star, the way he had been painted up and powdered and dyed and shaved and all the rest of it. He turned away in disgust. Time passed. How long? No one knows. It must have been 2 or 3 days, anyway. Time does not matter in the life beyond this. But Hoagie was stuck in a certain spot, and then suddenly he was moved again. He looked down and found that he was in a hearse, being driven to a church. He saw the casket taken into the church, and he saw the Roman Catholic memorial service. Then he saw the parson go up into his pulpit and give a eulogy on Hoagie McOgswasher. "This dearly beloved brother," intoned the parson, "is now in the arms of Jesus in heaven, enjoying the rewards of the virtuous." Hoagie turned away, and when next he looked, it was because of an insistent tugging. Downwards his gaze swept to find that he was being carried into the churchyard. Then there followed more service, and he jumped as a great clod of earth came tumbling down onto the casket. But then he felt very foolish indeed, as he realized that the body was down there, and he was up here, wherever there and here was. But with that, with the filling in of the grave, Hoagie felt free. He soared upwards with a force beyond his control, and then there was a little clunk, and he found, to his complete amazement, that he was again resting in the arms of these angels. As soon as he was in their arms, their wings started flapping, and their faces started smiling. They bore him upwards. Well, he did not know which way they were going. He would have said, every which way. But they traveled at a speed through a darkness, which seemed to be living. It seemed to be a darkness made of black velvet. But then, in the distance, light appeared. A glorious golden light. Hoagie strained his eyes in the direction from which the light came. They sped onwards, and the light became brighter and bigger, leaving Hoagie blinking with the intensity of it. Then, as the angels emerged from what seemed to have been a long tunnel, Hoagie saw the pearly gates sparkling away in front of him. Great golden gates, speckled all over with immense pearls. There was a gleaming white wall extending from the gates to the left and to the right, and through the bars of the gates, Hoagie could see immense domes of cathedrals and spires of noble churches. There was the sound of music in the air, holy music, "Abide with me" music, with a few bars of "Onward Christian Soldiers" coming from somewhere else. But they approached the gates with the angels, still clutching him, and their wings still flapping. Saint Peter, or some saint, appeared at the gates and demanded, "Who comes in the name of the Lord?" One of the angels answered, "Mr. Hoagie McOgswatcher, late of earth, comes. We demand admission." The gates swung open, and Hoagie saw his first saint up close. The saint seemed to be clad in a long white robe like an old-fashioned nightgown, reaching from his neck down to his ankles. He had a pair of wings stuck on behind, which flapped easily, and from somewhere at his back a shining brass rod extended a few inches above his head, and from the topmost point there was a shining golden halo. The saint looked at Hoagie, and Hoagie looked at the saint. The latter said, "You will have to go to the recording angel first to make sure that you are indeed entitled to enter. Over there, second door on the right." The angel took a fresh grip of Hoagie. He felt that he was in the hands of delivery men, and their wings started to flap. Slowly, the angels bore him along the smooth, clean roadway. Along the sides of the roadway, there were saints or heavenly inhabitants sitting on grassy banks, practicing harp playing. The noise was quite indescribable because they were all trying different musical pieces. But soon they reached the office of the recording angel. Gently, the attendants upended Hoagie so that he stood on his feet. Gently, they propelled him forward. "In there," said one. "Give all the necessary details, date of death, and all the rest of that. We'll wait." So in Hoagie went, and he saw a benevolent old saint sitting on a high stool, his wings flapping and looking over gold-rimmed spectacles, peering short-sightedly at Hoagie. He licked his thumb and pushed over a few pages of an immense ledger, muttering to himself as he did so, and then he stopped suddenly and held the page while his left hand extended upwards. "I've got it," he said. "Name, Hoagie McCogswasher, male, died unexpectedly. Yes, that's him. That's you. I've got your picture here." Hoagie looked on dumbly. It seemed to be a peculiar process to be going on like this. The old fellow's wings were flapping about, and they were making a noise as if the things were rusty. The recording angel jerked his thumb over his shoulder and said, "That way, that way, they're waiting for you outside. They'll do the right thing by you." Hoagie found himself moving, and it was nothing to do with him. He was just moving, and he went out without going through a doorway. Outside, as soon as they saw him, his attendants started their wings flapping again and their faces smiling. They caught hold of Hoagie and whisked him through the air. "Now, you'll have to go to church," said one. "Yes, just as well get in the swing of things at the start," said the other. And with that, they swooped down and entered the massive front entrance of a cathedral. Inside, there were angels sitting all over the place, their wings flapping in tune to the music. Hoagie was becoming more and more shocked. This seemed to be a travesty of things. But he stayed for the service, which seemed to go on for an endless time. And all the way through, the angels were flapping their wings, crossing themselves, bowing to the altar. At last, it was all over, and all the angels flew up like a flock of doves or pigeons, and Hoagie was left in the empty cathedral. He looked about him and marveled. It was impossible that this could be heaven. He'd been misled all the way along. This talk of angels was nonsense. This talk of people singing and going to services all the time, it was too absurd to be believed. And immediately it came to Hoagie that the whole thing was ridiculous. There was a sound like a clap of thunder, and there seemed to be a rippling flash go down from the sky to the ground. And it was as if a great curtain was rent and fell away. Hoagie looked up astounded. There was his father, coming toward him, laughing, and with his arms outstretched. "Oh, Hoagie, my boy," said Father McCogswasher, "you did hold to your religion-bred hallucination for quite a time, didn't you? Never mind, I went through all the same thing, except my hallucination led me to see Moses. Well now, you've come out of that, and we can get together and talk about things. Come with me, my boy. Come with me. You have a lot of friends and relatives here. They want to talk with you. And Father McCaug's washer led the way out to a beautiful, beautiful park, which seemed to be thronged with people. The park was more beautiful than anything Hoagie had ever seen in his life before his life on Earth, of course. The grass was of a peculiarly pleasant shade of green, and there were flowers, the likes of which he had never seen before, and he knew they were not flowers of Earth. The paths were wonderfully kept, and there was not a speck of dust or litter to be seen. To Hoagie's amazed delight, there were birds singing in the trees, and there were small animals about, dogs and squirrels and some other animals which were quite unknown to Hoagie. "Father," exclaimed Hoagie, "do animals come here as well, then?" Father McCaug's washer laughed. "Hoagie, my boy," he said, "you must not call me Father any more, for to do so would be just the same as calling an actor in a play by the name he used in that play. After the play is over, the actor can change his role and change his name. On the last life of Earth, I was your father, but in some previous life, you have been my father, or perhaps even my mother." Poor Hoagie's head absolutely reeled under that. It was so strange to him still. "But what am I to call you, then?" "Oh, well, until we get things more settled, go on, call me Father if you want to. It may save complications," said Father McCaug's washer. Hoagie was looking at his father, and then he said, "But do tell me, where are we? This is obviously not heaven, because you're a Jew. Jews are not admitted to heaven." Father McCaug's washer laughed uproariously. People looked in their direction and smiled. They'd seen this sort of thing happen so many, many times. "Hoagie, my boy, Hoagie, some of the concepts on Earth are completely wrong. I am a Jew, you say. Well, I'll tell you that I was a Jew while on Earth. Now, well, I belong to the true religion, the only religion, and the only religion is this. If you believe in a God or in a religion, then that is a good religion. It doesn't matter here if you're a Jew or a Catholic, a Protestant, a Muslim, or anything else. But the difficulty is that when one is taught all the old fables of a certain religion, then when one comes over here, one is so hypnotized by what one expects that that's all that one can see. On Earth, there are people who go about hallucinating all the time. They think they are this, that, or something else. You may go to a hospital for the mentally afflicted on Earth, and you might find a few Napoleons, a few Jesus Christs, or perhaps a few who call themselves Moses. These people really do honestly believe that they're what they pretend to be. Take, for instance," he pointed off into the distance, "over there, well, over there, at present, there's a gentleman, but newly arrived. While on Earth, he was taught that when he went to heaven, he would have everything he wanted, dancing girls by the dozen, etc., etc. He's over there now, living in a world of fantasy. There are dancing girls all over the place. And until he can see the fallacy of it all, then no one can help him. He may go on for years and years dreaming of this particular heaven, which is peopled by dancing girls and loads of food. As soon as he sees the fault, the same as you did with your angels and their wings, then he can be helped. Food, Father, food. Now, you have said something very sensible indeed. Where do we go to get food in this place? I am hungry, said Hoagy. Father McCogswasher looked at Hoagy and said, Hoagy, my boy, it should have dawned on you by now. Listen, you came here and you thought you were in heaven with angels all over the place, and more angels playing harps and singing away and all of that. But now you realize that it was mere hallucination. Well, it's the same with our friend over yonder. He thinks he has dancing girls around him. He doesn't. It's just his uncontrolled imagination. As it was, your imagination, which led you to see angels in the same way. If you want food, well, imagine it. You can control your imagination, and you can have whatever food you need. You can have roast beef if you want. You can have hot dogs if you want. You can have a bottle of whiskey. It's merely illusion, of course. But if you do go through with this rubbish that you want food, then you'll have to follow everything through quite logically. You take in food, so then later you have to get rid of certain things in the ordinary process of elimination. So, you have to imagine toilet facilities. And you have to sit on such an appliance and imagine, imagine, imagine. And that's all it is. You won't make progress while you're just bound to the silly things of the world. Well, I do feel hungry. That's not imagination. I feel very hungry indeed. So if I'm not allowed to have food because it's an illusion, what am I to do to get rid of my hunger? Hoagy sounded quite petulant. Father McCogswasher responded mildly, Of course, you feel hungry because you've had such a pattern all your life. At certain stated hours, you used to take in food, and you've got a habit of it now. If, instead of imagining dead meat going into you, you think of healthy vibrations, then you won't feel hungry. Think, Hoagy, all around you there is vibrant energy. It's pouring into you from everywhere. As soon as you realize that this is your food, your substance, you will not feel hungry. To imagine meats and drinks is entirely a backward maneuver, which will delay your progress quite a bit. Hoagy pondered the problem. Then he opened his mouth to protest and found that he was not hungry anymore. Father, Hoagy said, you look precisely as you looked when you were on the earth. How can that possibly be? You've been here for some time. Surely you should be looking a lot older. And in any case, as you're presumably just a soul now, well, it's got me so confused I don't know what to believe or what to do. Father McCogswasher smiled, a smile of compassion. We all go through this, you know, Hoagy. Some of us can rationalize more quickly than others. But suppose I had appeared to you as, oh, let me say, a young woman or a young man, would you have recognized me as the person you knew on Earth? If I came to you and talked to you with a different voice and with different features and a different frame, you would have thought it was just someone practicing a confidence trick on you. So here I appear to you as you remembered me. I speak to you in the tone that you remembered. In the same way, your friends who are here, your relatives who are here, will all appear as the familiar persons you knew on earth appear to you as such because you only see what you want to see. If I look at Mr. X, I know what I see. Mr. X looks in a certain way to me, but your conception of Mr. X may be quite different, and so you will see a different Mr. X. It's as though we were standing facing each other and one of us holds up a coin. One of us will see the head, the other will see the other side. It is the same coin, but we shall see different aspects of it. So it is here, so it is on earth even. No one knows precisely how one sees another person. The thing is never discussed. It's never thought about. So here we appear to others as we did upon earth. Hoagy had been looking out across the park, and he started with amazement at what he saw. There was a very pleasant lake, and on the lake there were boats, and there were people in the boats, rowing and sculling. Hoagy sat there on a park bench, absolutely staring across at the boats. Father McOgswasher turned to him and said, "Well, why shouldn't they have some fun, Hoagy? They're not in hell, you know. They're doing what they like to do, and that's a very good state to be in. Here, they can think up a boat. They can go out on the river, enjoy some of the sensations, although greatly enhanced here, that they enjoyed so much on earth." For a time, Hoagy could not reply. He was too amazed, too dumbfounded, and then he burst out, "But I thought we here were spirits, souls floating around. I thought we should go about singing hymns and reciting prayers. This isn't a bit what I expected of heaven." "Oh, but Hoagy, Hoagy, you are not in heaven. You are in a different dimension in which you can do things you couldn't do on earth. You are here as a sort of a halfway station. Some people experience considerable trauma in dying, in the same way that babies born to earth may have considerable trauma when they are born. They may have to be delivered by instruments, and then they get some damage as a result of that. Well, it's the same with dying. Some people, particularly if they have led a bad life, have a hard time in getting over and getting free of the shackles of earth. A mild illustration is the way in which you have been wanting food that you don't need. You know, you just think up your food and your clothes." Hoagy looked down at himself, and then he said, "Bodies, bodies, if we are souls, why do we have these bodies? What do we need them for?" Father McOgswasher smiled, and he said, "If you could appear on earth now, you would be a ghost, although more likely you'd be quite invisible. People would walk through you, and you'd walk through them, because of the difference in vibration. Here, you see me. You can touch me. I am solid to you, and you're solid to me. We've got to have some sort of vehicle in order to have our being. We've come from Earth, and now we have a different body on this intermediate plane. Our bodies still have a soul. The soul goes all the way up to the Overself, which is many planes above. We have a body here that we may learn things still by suffering as on earth, although of a much milder nature. But when we get up to, let us say, the ninth dimension, we shall still have a body suitable to the ninth dimension. If a ninth dimension person came down here now, he would be invisible to us, and we would be to him, because we're so different. We progress from plane to plane, and wherever we be, no matter the plane, no matter the condition, we always have a body suitable for that condition. Father McOgswasher laughed before saying, "You think you are talking to me, Hoagy, but you're not. You're not. You're doing it all by telepathy. We don't use speech here, except under the most unusual conditions. We use telepathy instead. But we have to go, my boy. You have to go to the Hall of Memories, and in that hall, you and you alone will see everything that you've done and thought about doing while on the earth. You will see what you wanted to do. You will see your successes, and they will appear unimportant. And you will see your failures. You judge yourself, Hoagy. You judge yourself. There is no wrathful God sitting in judgment and panting to consign you to hell or eternal damnation. There is no such thing as hell. Well, there is. Hell is earth, and there is no such thing as eternal damnation. On earth you experience certain things, and you try to do certain tasks. You may fail at those tasks, but that isn't important. What is important is how one tried to do a thing, how one led one's life, and you or your overself will judge how you lived and died on earth. You will decide what else has to be done to accomplish the task you set out to do, and maybe have not completed, but come, we must not stay here chatting idly." Father McOgswasher got to his feet, and Hoagy rose with him. Together they strolled over the green, close-cut lawns, stopping for a short time by the banks of the lake to admire the boats, to admire the waterfowl playing on the surface, and then they continued on their way. Hoagy laughed out loud as they rounded a bend in the path and came along toward a very pleasant tree which had a bough stretching horizontally from it. For on that horizontal bough, three cats were lying full length, tails drooping over the edge of the bough, and the three cats were purring and purring and purring in what Hoagy regarded as the warm afternoon sunlight. They stopped for a moment to look at the cats. The latter raised their heads, opened their eyes, and smiled at the sight of Hoagy's amazement. Then, having had their amusement, the cats put their heads back on the bark of the bough and drifted off to sleep. "No one here would harm them, Hoagy," said Father McOgswasher. "Here there is peace and trust in each other. This particular plane of existence is not a bad one at all." "Oh," exclaimed Hoagy, "then there are many planes of existence, are there?" "Oh, yes, there are many as are needed," replied Father McOgswasher. "People go to the stage most suitable for them. People come here to have a little rest and to decide what they're going to do and what they can do. Some people may be hurried back to Earth to take up a fresh body there. Others are sent upwards to a higher plane of existence. It just doesn't matter where one is. One still has lessons to learn and conclusions to draw. But anyway, the afternoon is well advanced. We must hurry because we have to get you to the Hall of Memories on this day. Let's get a move on, shall we? Father McCaug's washer walked faster, and it seemed that his feet were not even touching the walks. When Hoagie came to think about it, he couldn't feel the path under his feet either. It was all so frightfully strange, he thought. But anyway, the best thing to do, he concluded, was to keep quiet and see what others did. They'd been here so much longer. They rounded a little curve in the path, and straight ahead of them was the great Hall of Memories, a white building which seemed as though it were made of brilliantly polished marble. Father McOg's washer said, "Let's sit down here for a few moments, Hoagie. We don't know how long you'll be in the hall, and it's nice to look at all the people around, isn't it?" They sat down on what appeared to be a stone park bench. Hoagie was fascinated that the bench took up his form. That is, instead of being hard and unyielding, it gave a little, and it adapted to his shape. He leaned against the back, and that, too, adapted the most comfortable shape for him. "Look," said Father McCaug's washer. He pointed towards the entrance of the Hall of Memories. Hoagie followed his pointing finger and could scarce repress a smile. Slouching along was a big black cat, looking as shamefaced and as guilty as could be. The cat looked up, saw them, made a sharp turn, and disappeared behind some bushes. Father McCaug Washer laughed. "Do you know, Hoagie, here on this plane, even the animals have to go to the Hall of Memories. They don't speak in human terms, of course, but you won't either when you get there. It's all done by telepathy." Hoagie looked at his former father with open-mouthed amazement. "Do you mean to tell me that animals go to the Hall of Memories? You must be joking, surely." Father McCaugwasher shook his head and laughed outright. "Hoagie, Hoagie, you haven't changed at all, have you? You think that humans are at the top of the rung of evolution. You think that animals are inferior creatures, don't you? Well, you're wrong, you're wrong. Humans are not the ultimate form of perfection. There are so many, many other forms. Everything that is has a consciousness. Everything that is lives. Even this bench upon which we now sit is just a collection of vibrations. It senses high points on your anatomy, and it yields to those high points and molds to you to give you greater comfort. Look." He stood up and pointed, and Hoagie looked at the place where he had been sitting. "The bench is returning to its normal state when I sit down on it." He suited the words to the action, or the action to the words, whichever way you like to put it, and he sat down, and immediately the bench took up his anatomical form. "But as I was saying, Hoagie, everything has a consciousness. Everything that is in a state of evolution. Now, cats do not become humans any more than humans become cats. They are different lines of evolution, in the same way that a rose does not become a cabbage, or a cabbage does not become a rose. But it has been proved, even on Earth, that plants have feelings. Those feelings have been detected, measured, and plotted by sensitive electronic equipment. Well, here on this world, people come to an intermediate stage. Here, we are closer to the animals than we are on Earth. Don't think, Hoagie, that this is heaven. It is not. Nor is the stage above, or above that, or even above that. Here is what we might term a halfway station, a place of sorting where it is decided what people will do when they go up to a higher plane, or will they go back to Earth. I've learned a lot since I've been here, and I know that we are very, very close to the Earth plane. We are the difference between the ordinary AM radio and FM radio. FM is a lot better quality than is AM. It has faster vibrations, finer vibrations, and here, on this world, our vibrations are much, much better than those on Earth. We can perceive more things. We're in a state between the Earth physical and the Overself spiritual. We come here because we lose so many inhibitions. That is, on Earth, I would have thought anyone was mad if they told me that a cat could talk, could have reason, and all the rest of it. Here, I learn that yes, they do have reason, very brilliant reason, too, in some cases, but on Earth, we do not understand that, because the precise pattern of reason is different from that of humans. They sat there for some moments. They could just see the outline of the cat in the distance. He was looking about rather guiltily, and then he seemed to shrug his shoulders, lay down in the bright light, and went to sleep. Sunlight. Hoagie looked at the sky and then remembered that there was no sun here. Everything was a miniature sun. Father McHawkwasher had obviously been following his thoughts, because he remarked, "Oh, no, there is no sun here. We take our energy from our surroundings. It is radiated to us, and here we do not have to eat Earth-type food. We do not have to indulge in the Earth-type form of eliminations. If we take the radiant energy from here, we always have as much as we want, and no more. But of Earth-type food, well, there's always such a lot of wastage, and getting rid of it is one of the big problems of humanity at the present time. So remember, Hoagie, you don't need to think up a meal here. Just let yourself be, and your body will take all the energy it requires, and you will not get hungry unless you think of Earth-type food. And then, for a short time, you will possibly have a craving for it." Just at that moment, a man came by, and Hoagie started in real amazement. The man was smoking a pipe. Striding along, swinging his arms, he puffed heartily on a pipe and was belching clouds of smoke. Father McHawkswasher looked at Hoagie and laughed again. "Hoagie," he said, "I've been telling you that some people crave for Earth-type food. Some people crave to have a smoke or a drink. Well, they can have it if they want to, but there just isn't any point in it. It means that they have not evolved to the stage necessary for them to shuck off old Earth habits. That fellow is smoking. Well, okay, he likes it. But at some time, he will come to the realization that it's just silly. He thinks of tobacco, and then he thinks of a tobacco pouch, Then he puts a hand in a suit of clothes which he has thought up and produces an imaginary pouch of tobacco, with which he then fills an imaginary pipe. Of course, it is illusion. It is hallucination. It's self-hypnosis. But you get the same in mental hospitals on the earth. You get a fellow who's got a lot of screws loose. Some may even have dropped out. And the fellow, being insane to a greater or lesser degree, thinks he's driving a car or riding a horse. I remember once going to a big mental hospital in Ireland, and there I saw a man in most peculiar attitude, and I asked him what he thought he was doing. He looked at me as if I was an idiot, not realizing that he was, and said, "Well, what do you think I'm doing? Can't you see my horse? The fool is tired. He's lying on the ground, and we can't possibly ride along until that fool horse gets up on his feet." The insane man then carefully got off his imaginary horse and walked off in disgust, talking about all the lunatics there were in the mental home. Hoagie squirmed. He couldn't understand what was happening to him. He felt most peculiar. It seemed that he was a piece of metal being drawn to a magnet. For some strange reason, he grasped the arm of the bench. Father McCaug's washer turned towards him and said, "The time has come, Hoagie. They're calling you to the Hall of Memories. You'd better go. I'll wait here until you come out. I may be able to help you, but when you come out, call me Moses, not Father. I am not your father here. But now, go." Hoagie rose to his feet, and even in the process of rising to his feet, he found that he had been drawn much closer to the Hall of Memories. In some confusion, he turned to face the entrance, and then found that he was almost running. He was going faster than he wanted to, anyway. But the great stone steps loomed ahead of him. Now, this close, he was amazed at the size of the hall. The dimensions of the great entrance thoroughly frightened him. He felt, as possibly an ant might feel, going through the entrance to some palace on earth. He ascended the steps. Each one seemed to be higher than the one before. Or was it that way? Possibly he was growing smaller with each step he took. Smaller in his own estimation, certainly. But he summoned up his courage a bit more and progressed upwards. Soon he reached what seemed to be a vast flat surface. He seemed to be on a plateau, a featureless plateau, except that ahead of him there was a great door which seemed to reach up into the heavens. Hoagie walked forward, and as he approached the great door, it opened, and Hoagie entered in to the Hall of Memories. The door closed behind him. End of chapter 9.